Vicious, Marina Harv Schlieter. There's an interesting question asked about the way that Torah talks about the laws of interest. About three different places in the Torah it talks about the din, Shemos, Vayikra, and Devarim, and it uses the word neshech, and neshech means a bite. And it's a very strange word to use for, I mean, we call interest ribbit or ribbit, but what is this word neshech, which means to bite? It's the poor people who often need to borrow money, and the hardship for them is not so much paying back the capital, but paying back the interest. It bites them. But I like to see it personally as something more than that. And that is when you pay your credit card bills, and you don't pay the whole lot in one go, you just pay the minimum amount. When you get your next bill, you're paying interest not only on what you borrowed, what your purchases, you're also paying interest on the interest. It starts cumulatively being that the interest you were owing and didn't pay back, you're paying interest on that as well. That really bites. That's something which develops itself and multiplies itself in such a way that it's a real hardship. But you might ask the question, nowadays, in modern economies, it's essential to have a rate of interest. In fact, the whole economy is run on the basis of a rate of interest. Everyone waits with bated breath when the Bank of England is going to announce what the rate of interest is going to be, and it's based upon inflation, and it's based upon affecting unemployment, and there's all this concern about if we join the euro, because then the rate of interest will be dictated by Strasbourg or our German friends, and we'll have no sovereignty left at all. So how do we reconcile this idea that a modern economy has to run itself on a rate of interest, and yet the Torah intrinsically makes such a point that no interest may be paid or taken when you are dealing with your fellow Jew? Well, in actual fact, the answer is really in the question. Because it is something so fundamental. Just like we have fundamental rules relating to our diet, just like we have fundamental rules relating to our routine and our marriages and our ways of life, Beidon Lachavero, Beidon Vemokon, so also, as far as our money is concerned, intrinsically, as far as our conception and perception of ownership of our money is concerned, we have to be aware that that money is not really ours. To remind ourselves that nothing really belongs to us, and the money which we are zochet to have is from the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem gives us that money to use in a particular purpose. And Hashem is reminding us of that by saying, you are not allowed to pay or take interest. Just like, for example, with a Shemitah year, for a whole year, we do not plow or sow the land. The land is ours. Why shouldn't we? Well, Kili Kol Haaretz, the land is God's, but we work on it, we toil on it, we slave hard, and why shouldn't we get the benefits of it? Shemitah says no. That is a comparison to do with interest. So even in the modern economy, alright, we've got the heter iska, there are ways and means of doing things in a legal fashion. But even in the modern economy, we are reminding ourselves that interest is not something to be paid or taken with our fellow Jew. And the story is told of the Chasam Sofer who lent a lot of money to somebody. And this fellow came back and repaid the loan and said to the Chasam Sofer, because you were so kind to me, I brought for you a nice present as well. And the Chasam Sofer opened up the box, and in it was a beautiful diamond. And the Chasam Sofer took this diamond, and he held it up to the air, and he was admiring it. Its beauty was magnificent. And then he said, thank you very much, but I'm afraid I can't accept this from you. I'm giving it back to you. The fellow said, why not? Why can't you take it? He says, because it's ribbis. So the fellow said, yes, but if that's the case, why didn't you just give it back to me straight away? Why did you first have to admire it and marvel at it? Said the Chasam Sofer, because I wanted to see how beautiful this diamond is. Because the mitzvah of not taking ribbis is even more beautiful. To appreciate not just the diamond, but to appreciate even more the din about ribbis. Says the Pirkei Rabbi Elezer, referring to the prophecies of Yechezkel, that there were four heavenly winds which came forth and opened up the treasure room of the souls of the people. and each spirit was returned to its body of flesh, talking about Tachiyas HaMaisim. And they all stood on their feet except for one man. Yechezkel the prophet asked, Creator of the universe, what happened to this man? God answered, He took ribbis. And this is alluded to in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, that the person who takes ribbis does not be zocher Tachiyas HaMaisim. We will read as an introduction the first sif of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, which you have in front of you. Simon Sadi Samachay, towards the end of the first side. Lefisha Nafsha Shalodon Betiva Chamedes, Umisavo Alamoman. Because the nature of a person is easily inclined towards being lustful towards money, the Korav Yosef Shaheldom Nichshal Isaribis, it's much easier for a person to stumble on the prohibition of interest, Mibisharisum Shibamomon, as opposed to other prohibitions with money, kiva gozel v'anochadom, because when it comes to theft or overcharging and so on, hariz a mashgiach al atzmo, a person is more careful on himself, shelo yei nigzol, but he doesn't steal, shelo yisane, he doesn't overcharge, v'gam zehu rotzeh nigzol, alonet his chavero. So also that if a person does want to steal or overcharge, v'fom yehu nimna mechmas bushon. But even if he does feel inclined to steal or do other things, he is embarrassed to. Omach Masiro, he's got some fear about it. Masha Enkein Baribis. But that same embarrassment might not exist with interest. Kihalova, because the person who is borrowing, knows no bitsona hatov, he wants to give willingly to pay for the loan. Usameach, he's happy about it. Kimotsamokum Lilvos al Kalponim Baribis. He's glad to be able to find the money which he desperately needs, so he'll pay something for it. The Galamalva and also the lender, Choshev Badata, what does he think to himself? Kiari Ositova Gadora, he says, I'm doing the guy a favour, Imalova, with the borough. Sheyuchal Arviach, Mamamzeh, he can make a profit out of this money I'm lending him. Kiflei Kiflaim, far, far more than what I'm lending him, far, far more than what he's paying in interest. He's going to do business with it, he's going to make lots of more money out of it. Yosemin Oribis, more than the interest, so why should I feel guilty? V'lochein Nekama Ode, a person therefore might be more lenient, Sheyodom. A person might be seduced by his evil inclination, Leo's Nifshol B'Isozeh, to be stumbling in this prohibition. Al-Kain, therefore, Ichmira Torah Seinach Gadosha Me'od B'Isozeh, the Torah was therefore very strict about it. V'Harbe Lavin Nerubo, there are many prohibitions listed on it. Hamova Ova B'Shisho Lavin, there are six prohibitions in the Torah on a person who borrows. Who lends such money, and he will not get up when it comes for the time of the resurrection of the dead. Shneimar says, that's from Yecheskel chapter 18, talking about a person who dealt with interest, he will not live. A person who borrows, there's three Yisroi Daraisa, and the persons who are involved, Hasofer, the scribe who writes the document, Eidim, Orev, the witnesses, the guarantor, all of those are also involved in an Issur Lav Daraisa. Please note accountants and solicitors. V'chein Asarasur, and also the broker, the person who arranges, the mortgage broker, whatever, who transacts the loan between one Jew and another Jew, Shoy Bein Neyem, Oshiyisa Lechod Meyem, Shesia Echod Meyem, who helps one of them, Kigan Shehorah Mokham Na'alov Elilvos, Shehorah Mokham Ramal Velovos, who brings him to the place, or borrow or to lend, gam came over Balavechod, also transgress an Issur Lav Daraisa. So that is Issur Ribis, something which is very easily to stumble on. Now it's a very wide subject and it's very difficult to go into the aspects, but we will just highlight certain points today. And before we start, I'll tell you another story about Rabbi Akiva Rega. It happened in Europe that a moneylender made his fortune from being an Urgerer. That's right. And he made his money from collecting ribbis payments from poor people, and he passed away. And the Chevra Kedisha felt a bit of vengeance for this man, so they decided to refuse to bury him unless his family would pay an exorbitant sum of money to pay for the grave. And the heirs of this man were incensed and upset by this unjust treatment, so they said they're going to the Rav, and they went to Rabbi Akiva Rega. And they said, you know, why should we have to pay more just because our father might not have been so frum? And Rabbi Akiva thought about it. He said, no, it's quite appropriate that you pay more for his grave, because the normal price of the grave assumes that the purchaser will have it just for a limited time, until Tchiyas HaMesim, when the dead will be brought back to life. But the person who collects ribis, he will not merit Tchiyas HaMesim. Therefore, he will remain in the grave for eternity, and therefore he's got far longer use of the grave, so it's only right that he pays more for this piece of land. No, it's a higher price because the rental of the piece of land is longer. That was the svara of the... It wasn't halva, anyway, it was a purchase. Perhaps one of the most commonest forms of shiras which have cropped up in the last generation is the subject of inflation. Because the value of the currency does decrease as time progresses, and if you borrow a pound and a year later you give back that pound, in real terms that pound might not be worth as much as the pound that you borrowed. The poskim, however, are unanimous that ribis is prohibited to cover for inflation. The fact is that it might not be so easy to identify exactly, but you could say, well, what about the retail price index, or as they say in America, the consumer price index? The general psak, which is brought by the Chazon Ish, brought by Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Igros Moshe, and the Minchas Yitzchok, Dayan Weiss, is that ribis is prohibited even if it represents a compensation for the lost value in that particular currency. Now, what if there was a devaluation? If there was a devaluation during the term of the loan, may the borrower compensate the lender for the loss in value? Now, there is on that a dispute amongst the poskim. Based on Choshen Mishpat, Siman Ayin Daled, one should follow, preferably, say the Svarim, the stringent opinion, if one can, and only the money is borrowed should be repaid. I mean, quite, if in Israel it might happen a lot, because if you borrow 10 shekalim in Israel, and the 10 shekalim only worth, say, $4, and when it came to pay it back, the 10 shekalim only worth $3, then the shekel is now worth less. Dayan Weiss writes about this. However, there's also the opinion that when the shekel has been tied up to the dollar, then maybe there is room for leniency, because the dollar is an established currency in Israel for many purchases, well, it has been in the past. I understand that there's legislation coming through in Israel now to limit the use of the dollar in purchases. So, but when it's directly linked, some poskim are lenient. But generally speaking, devaluation... Well, I don't know how to explain it myself, but there has been in the past a direct linkage into the currency of the dollar is accepted in Israel as a payment. And therefore one can say that a loan took place in dollars. So that when you buy a car in Israel, you'll be paying in dollars. When you pay for a flight, you might be paying in dollars. Well,
whereas if the shekel is devalued, you say it's not.
Well, the complication there is the linkage to another currency. Is the foreign currency regarded as a local currency or not? What I hope to come to today, if there's time, is to discuss foreign currencies. If the currency is called a local currency, or if it's called a foreign currency. If it's called a foreign currency, it's called a commodity, and there's a separate din relating to commodities as to how we deal with them. So, there won't be time to deal with that now in detail, but if one is selling an item, and there isn't a loan, there is a way of protecting somewhat against inflation, because a businessman can protect himself against inflation where the purchaser hasn't actually taken possession of the article which he is selling till a later date. Because then a seller may stipulate that the price is based on the item's value at the time it is actually acquired or delivered. But when there's the purchaser taking immediate possession, the agreement may stipulate that the purchase price will be based on the value of the item at the time of the payment. That can be done. But this is only done if there's no explicit offer of a lower price if one immediately pays. Because if there's an offer of a lower price and then you pay more later, then there is a ribis involved. Generally, two-tier pricing systems cause problems with ribis. If you pay now, if you pay later after 10 days. On the other hand, if you go into certain Hebrew bookshops, you will be told in gold is green that if you pay by cash, you will be allowed a 5% discount because they go through the expense of handling credit cards and there's administration involved. So Turkle's bookshop, I have been asked to advertise it, will give you a 5% discount if you're paying by cash rather than by credit card. That's the subject of inflation. Mortgages is probably the one where everybody is paying some sort of interest, and the problem, of course, is when you're dealing with a mortgage with a Jewish firm or whatever it is. Now, in Israel, there is a heter iska. A heter iska is you're entering a partnership. And very often, when there is a problem of interest between one Jew and another Jew, you are usually getting around any problems by having this agreement where you sign a partnership with each other. And that the person who is given back more money is getting profits of a business. So you're partners of a business and you're paying profits. That's on the understanding that some sort of investment or business is being done with the money. So we're not going to deal today much with heter iska, but it's a general rule which one should remember as being applicable for avoiding these situations. In the event of a mortgage, if you are dealing as a mortgage or a large loan with a Jew, then the easy way is to have a heter iska. But Moshe Feinstein did suggest another option. He said that if you're buying a house and you take out a mortgage, then you can have what's called a sale-lease agreement. That half of the property is bought and half of the property is being rented. So that you are paying a rent which, in real terms, will be reflecting interest you would otherwise have been paying over a period of time until the end of the period of the lease, when the property will become fully yours. So that if you say buy a house for £200,000 and half of it then will be £100,000 will be a direct payment for the ownership, and the other payment will be a reflection of rent, but it will be more than £100,000, but it will be rent you're paying for the other half of the house that you don't yet own. And he said that's perfectly legitimate method. Right, well then you have to pay and you have to call in the loan and you can't make adjustments to... Well, that is one of the disadvantages which the one is quite right about. You know, Shaila asked about, you know, how to build a house, and the rabbi tells him when the house falls down, he says, yeah, well, Tosafot asked that question. There are poskim who are opposed to the use of a heter iska, where the money is not actually used in a business or revenue-producing investment. So this is an advantage of using this method. But there are disadvantages. Another disadvantage is if the house is damaged. Who is responsible for repairing the damage if there's a fire? Right? This can be avoided, though, where the sale-lease contract can require the buyer to maintain adequate insurance cover for the whole house. There is another option, and that is deliberately charging a higher price for the house, but there is that problem of if you call in the mortgage earlier and so on. So there are disadvantages. And it could become very disproportionate in terms of figures. Now that's mortgage. The question has arrived a lot in the last 100 years about companies. You know, if you're dealing with small businesses, right, have a heter iska and so on, what if you're dealing with a very large company where the majority of the shareholders certainly are Jewish, or even some of the shareholders might be Jewish? The questions have often arisen with such firms as Tesco or Marks and Spencer, which have had strong Jewish connections in the past, although those may have diminished lately. The attitude of Reb Moshe Feinstein has been that as a limited company is not really a person, and it's a body which isn't really a body as such, he is quite lenient about such companies paying out ribis for deposits, for loans, for credits, even if that corporation is totally owned by Jews. However, not all other poskim are very happy with that, and even Reb Moshe Feinstein will say that when it comes to collecting interest from Jewish borrowers, where they are paying interest into the company, then there should be a heter iska. that the halachic status of a company with Jewish and non-Jewish shareholders can be something which is found to be of great dispute. Any degree of Jewish ownership can cause problems. The other thing is, even if the majority of shares are owned by Jews, what are the decisions lying on? Who is making the decisions? So some will say, it's not to do with the shareholders, it's to do with the directors. Those who are actually involved on the board who are making decisions about the running of that company. So on that basis, Rabbi Shaul Salanter and other poskim will hold, Dine Weiss, will say that where the shareholders are not the decision makers, we don't have to worry. But where the directors are involved, then we do have to worry. I was once advised when I took out a loan, get all these favourable terms put through the junk mail in your letterbox, and one of the ones which go for loans are Marks and Spencer. They got their financial services, they do a credit card, they do personal loans, and the advice which I had from a local rabbi at that time was it's preferable not to engage in a personal loan with Marks and Spencer if they are still controlled by having some Jewish directors. But the Dieva, there are poskim one can rely on based on the fact that there is a majority of Jewish shareholders and so on, and that it's a company. Well, it is a share of profits, but it's best to have a heteriska if one can, when one is having a share of profits. Because in a way, dividends are like a payment of interest as well. But although they're called shares in profits, and they're not exactly defined just like the rate of interest is defined, there is still a rabbinical rule about that as well, because you're being rewarded for the loan.
Do you need to have first people, both parties, to sign an agreement?
Yes. It has, well, let's put it this way. When you enter an Israeli bank, you don't have to sign a heteriska because it's called a heteriska klali, but every party should be aware of its existence, even if you're not actually a signatory to it.
So should you make your own heteriska and let all your creditors or debtors know that you have one?
Well, when it's a private, when it's a private transaction, it's not a heteriska klali, but just a heteriska, then both sides should really sign with Aidin. Well, there's a dispute whether you need Aidin. Some say it's not necessary to have witnesses. But it should be a legal documentation that the two of you have a partnership and that you are sharing the profits, and that the person who is actually going ahead doing the business with it might even receive a nominal sum of payment, like £1, from the other person who's the sleeping partner for the work that he's doing in running the business. That's put into the texts of the heteriskas, which you find, I think the Adas Luach have a text of the heteriska, but there are different kinds relating to different circumstances. There is an art scroll, Sefer on Ribbis, written in English, which is very detailed, giving all the texts you need for a heteriska. Now, what if you wish to be very kind to somebody else who says, look, I haven't got a credit card and I don't have the credit worthiness to get a credit card, so in your real goodness and generosity you say, alright, well, I've got a few credit cards, you can take one of mine and you can use it. And this person goes and uses the credit card and fails to pay back the money so that interest starts to accrue. Now, if the agreement between you is that he will pay back by the due date, which is within 56 days or whatever it is, fine. There are poskim who say that if he fails to pay back, even though he agreed that he would pay back by that time, and he doesn't, there are certain poskim which allow you to take from him the sum which has to then be paid. But generally speaking, if interest then accrues month by month, it is not allowed for him to pay that interest, even if that interest is paid directly from him to the credit card company. That is a chiddush. Because many people think, well, you know, it's nothing to do with me. It's his, my credit card, okay, but I'm giving it to him and I don't care what he does, and I can just leave the country and get on with the job, and I give him the paying in slips and he pays it all. The poskim are not happy about this because they're saying that there are really two different loans. There is really a loan from the bank to you, and there is a loan from you to that person. And that person who is paying back interest is really giving you interest. And the only way of getting around this is using a heteroskia. And it's the same with a mortgage. Sometimes you might be so generous and rich that the person you want to help is young and not creditworthy and can't get a mortgage. So in your generosity, you go and get a mortgage for these people, and then you say to them, right, you now pay the interest. There should really be a heteroskia involved. Yes? That's correct. We're talking about where the credit card company or the bank is Jewish. Yeah. And then, if you lend your Barclay card out, then there's still a problem. Because even if Barclays is not Jewish, there are two loans. It's as if they are giving you interest, and then you are paying that money back. So that is a problem. The only way around it is a heteroskia. Yes?
I've done a couple of other things. Two Jewish people are trading with each other. And the price is dependent on the discount is dependent on the time of payment. Is that kind of a
risk? Yes. Definitely. The idea of paying later and accruing more money. Sometimes there are certain prosecutors we talk about if there's a one-off payment as a fine, there might be certain criterion, but I'd like to not to get involved in that. The general principle is that as a result of the passage of time, more money has to be returned. That is ribis. Now, right. Yeah, if you pay me now, because it involves less work, you can have a discount. Now, I'm now self-employed, or so I send out bills to people, and unfortunately there are some very orthodox Jewish people who might not pay exactly on time, and without suggesting anything defamatory. But the interesting thing is then, if they say, oh well, he can wait a bit, he's got it, so he drives around in a lovely car and he can afford it, and I've got to pay my school bills and therefore I can delay payment a bit, they justify it. And then I start with gentle reminders. I can't charge them interest, and even if I've got some big expense myself and I go to the bank and I have to overdraw from the bank to pay, say, for my new car, I can't say to the fellow, look, because of you, I'm paying interest to the bank. You've got to therefore give me interest. I can't do that. But what I can do is, I can say to the fellow, and this is what I write in my terms of business, which they sign on engagement, is that any reminders which have to be sent out will accrue an administration charge of £25. And these letters will be sent every 14 days. Because when I have to send out a reminder... Well, if I'm going to send out a reminder, I'm going to take the file off the shelf, I'm going to open it up, and I'm going to print a reminder invoice, attach a photocopy of the original one, or whatever it is, put it in an envelope, put a stamp on it, go to the letterbox. I can charge for that, because that's work. So every 40 days I can send a reminder based on that £25 administration charge, which they in fact agreed to originally. And even if they don't agree to it originally, in Jewish law I can do it, but in English law I can't.
It's got to be a reasonable amount, I presume. You can't say £150, that would be ribbis.
Well, it depends, you see. You don't know what my charges are, do you? You don't know what my overheads are, do you? I've got to pay a secretary, I've got to pay business rates, and I've got to...
Whatever they are, presumably you can't charge much over that limit, or that would be ribbis.
Well, if the agreement, if it's a fixed amount, which is an administration charge, yeah?
That's cool.
And it's based on the fact that I have to engage a secretary to send out these letters, I'm entitled to charge for that nuisance, because I'm suffering as a result of it with all my overheads. So there is no rule about how much I can charge. And I can't adjust that sum according to the volume of the job. Because then it looks like ribis, certainly. But it wouldn't be ribis though, right, sir.
Does it have to generally be based on all that? It can't be based on the value of money, and it can't be interest-based?
No, that's correct. Irrespective of how much money is owing, I can make a penalty for the fact that I've got work involved in trying to get the money. I mean, eventually you have to go to court, you've got to get bailiffs and so on, and the cost of going to court is not reflected in the amount of work involved. You know, when you get your court costs back, well, that's another halacha, you're not going to go to court, you're going to go to a Beis Din, and a Beis Din, you know, you can't charge interest, but you can charge for the work involved in recovering what is owing to you.
Using that has to be a structure any loan by saying, I'll send you out a mortgage statement every 5 days or 10 days or so for this fixed fee, and that way you can do that considering building up interest in the loan.
You weren't allowed to base it on interest.
No, you see, well, first of all, you're talking about a loan. I was talking about where I've sold a service in money and zoning, which is not quite the same thing. Where you're lending money, it's not quite so straightforward. And if you call it something else, we have to call a spade, it is a loan. And if you frame it in other words like that, it's still, that is a payment of interest, and it's probably based on the amount which is owed anyway. So one has to be careful, and one is treading in dangerous water there. Foreign currencies, there isn't a lot of time left. Finish what, 25 to 20 to pub? Right. No, then not go over. Yeah. All right. It might be interesting, but I'm not going to go overboard. To talk about foreign currency involves us in a halacha called sar basar, which is quite a complex rule, but I'll try and summarise it briefly. There is a rule in Ribis that if you lend a commodity to somebody, an article, there is a problem in actually lending, say, a loaf of bread, because the loaf of bread that you get back might be a bit bigger, it might be worth a little bit more, it might be a better quality. So what do we do about ribis? So we're told by Chazal, if it's something like something small, like a loaf of bread or a dozen eggs, no problem. If the eggs are a little bit more, people don't actually mentally conceive it as something more. So if the eggs are slightly larger, it doesn't matter. If the loaf is slightly bigger, it doesn't matter. You certainly can't give back 14 eggs instead of 12 eggs, even if there might be an adjustment in the size. 12 eggs is 12 eggs. And even if there was a depreciation in the value of eggs, you can't give back more than 12 eggs. But you can give back the eggs, which might be, you know, maybe if they're organic, you know, they're whatever it is, you can give back the same 12 eggs, even if they're better in quality. So that's the rule of sar basar. Yes.
If somebody borrows a bottle of wine, which has the price of it, sold it for, say, £3, and the borrower makes sure wants to return the bottle of wine, but finds it costs them £4. Right? Is the person who lent that wine going to pay the difference of a pound or not?
No, he doesn't have to. As a commodity, and it's called a small item, so sar basar won't apply, it is always accepted that there are values in there are fluctuations in values. So that if a bottle of wine is £3 or £4, it's the same bottle of wine, we're not worried. However, agreement may be made to pay back the sum of £3. Well, you can give back the same bottle of wine, irrespective of the price.
The actual bottle has been used, I'm saying.
Right, yeah, and a different bottle of wine.
The same make.
Oh, the same wine. Yeah, that's definitely okay. It's the same bottle. Yeah, even if its price went up. The problem of sar basar is when you're using something different, when you're giving back something different to what you borrowed. And if you're borrowing a car, you can even give it back with more petrol in the tank. That's not called ribis. It's the same car, and the petrol is ancillary, and the poskim don't make a fuss about that. There are small adjustments, and it's the same thing that you borrowed. But when you're spending or using up what you're borrowing, you're drinking a bottle of wine, and then you're giving back another one, that's the principle of sar basar. So there are three exceptions to the rule of sar basar which give you a heter. One is if it's something small like the wine or bread or whatever it is. The second thing is called yeshlo. If the person borrowing already has in his possession that same kind of merchandise, then sar basar won't apply. So if I want to borrow from you 10 crates of whiskey, that's not something small, but I've already got whiskey in my possession, so I've already got something with which I can give back to you, that, called yeshlo, allows you to do this sar basar, borrowing commodities and giving back commodities. So the gauge slope principle can be quite complex, and there isn't time to go into it. But there is a heter also that if that person hasn't already got in his possession, the poskim actually say that when before you lend, you can actually give some to the person as a present, that he's already got some in his possession. You can give him a gift, and then you've already got the gauge slope. The third heter of Sar Basar is when items are available in the market at a set price. And when those items in the market being at a set price, like seasonal fruits and vegetables, the strawberries are £1 for a, whatever, one little box. So if there's a set price, you can borrow and pay back because it's roughly around that price level, subject to small fluctuations. It's the same idea that it's called something small. The problem with foreign currency is that even if yeshlo, there is the problem of, is it called a set price? And the poskim say that as prices fluctuate of foreign currencies day to day, then you cannot rely on the rule of Sar Basar. So if you're borrowing and lending the currency of the country in which you are living, the pound, there are fluctuations in value, it doesn't matter. You lend me a pound, I pay you back a pound, even though that pound might be worth something different as the days go by, more or less. No problem of ribis. But with foreign currencies, the poskim say this is called a commodity. So if it's just a packet of sugar, no problem, because that's something small. Yeshlo, no problem. Set price, no problem. But foreign currencies, some poskim say, well, foreign currencies might change day by day, there's still a set price within the actual day. Others hold, no, foreign currencies even within the same day go up and down in value after a few hours, therefore there's no set price. Therefore, if you're doing business in borrowing and lending foreign currencies, there should be a heter iska. I'm going to finish off with one or two pieces, and that is when a person goes up to Shemayim, he's asked three questions. We're told by Chazal the person is asked, the first question the person is asked is not, did you lay tefillin every morning, did you put on your tzitzis, did you daven in North Hendon Shul every morning. Important that these things are, the first person the question is asked is not even, did you learn Torah, it's how did you deal in your business affairs. And the one real nichshol, the one real stumbling block in business affairs, is payments of interest. And that is the very first question which a person is asked. Only after that is a person asked, Pavato itim l'Torah, did you make times for learning of Torah? And Sipisa l'Shur, did you anticipate the redemption of the coming of the Mashiach? And when it asks, when you're asked this question of Nososa v'Nosata be'emunah, did you deal be'emunah, it doesn't say, did you deal b'tzedek, righteously and giving tzedakah, did you deal with mishpat, did you deal according to the din? It says be'emunah, be'emunah, with faith, with your faith in Hashem. Because the most fundamental thing about your business dealings is the way you deal with Hashem. There's a story I've told of the Chasam Sofer. A shochet once came to him and said, I'm giving up my business. The business of being a shochet. He says, what do you mean you're giving up your trade of being a shochet? Why is that? He says, there are so many shilas. I'm so worried, the kashrus of the knife and the way I check the animal, and such a responsibility. I'm worried people might eat trade for meat. So he says, what are you going to do? He says, I'm going to go into a business. I'm going to open up a shop and I'm going to trade. He answered him, you realize how many more halakhas you have to know, far, far more than you have to know when you're a shochet. You have to go through right through choshen mishpat and know the dinim of it properly, because when you conduct a business, boy, there are so many pitfalls you have to know. And that is why be careful is the name of the game. The things I've said are generalized, brief. I'm sorry for the brevity. Everybody who has these problems really needs to ask Shaila to the Rav, and you can't really quote anything that I've told you today. Thank you very much. Thank you.